live and local,
across the city
and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Alex Elbrook.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Local historian Anthony Carpen is back with me today, and I'm really pleased that we're going to be looking at Cambridge's past around Christmas time, and specifically around the time of the First World War. Hi, Anthony.
Hello again. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
After no rest for the wicked. Can't complain too much, given how cold it is outside, but time of year.
Yes, that's very true. Very true indeed. Now, you've been delving into the archives, and I believe you found some interesting stuff from around the First World War.
Yes, this is really an article from the Cambridge Independent from the 1st of January 1915. And what the newspapers did in those days was they reviewed, first of all, the preceding year. And also what they would do is they had a good look around who was doing what, in particular for charity, as well as who was going to, what masses were being put on by which churches in kind of in the run-up to Christmas time. So I almost see it as something similar to perhaps the way, you know, we would look at the TV guides and see, you know, what was on. And for them it was, you know, because there was no television and there was no radio. And also there was no recorded music. So these are things that, you know, today we take for granted, but back then they didn't have any of that. So actually a lot of the entertainment they had to make themselves. Now, obviously, we have spent the past few years with the centenaries of the First World War and the battles coming up to really the past decade. So I had a look at what was happening in Cambridge, mindful that the population of the borough was officially only around 50,000 people at that time, and obviously the boundaries were much, much smaller. And despite all of that, Cambridge was one of the kind of like mustering points, which is one of the reasons why you find postcards of the camps on Jesus Green and so forth. And so one of the things I looked at was, okay, well, what was happening? And what we find is that a lot of the provisions and entertainments for the troops were not put on by the authorities, but were actually, it was the effectively voluntary services that got together, because compared to today, central and local government was still in their infancy.
Oh, so would you say, would they put on shows like kind of what we would know as a pantomime, or would they put on sort of music entertainment?
Nominally, yes. And it was certainly in the newspapers, it would be very much presented as good, clean Christian fun.
Ah, right.
If I can put it that way, you know, not the slightest hint of scandal. And one of the things, again, that's very, very easy to forget is just how influential, almost suppressive, the culture was and the influence of the established church and the other churches were back then. So if anyone was seen to step out of line, it's almost a moral pressure would be so great that the authorities would be compelled to act. And this is particularly important in one of the military camps, which was established in very late 1914 in a place called Cherry Hinton Meadows. And that happens to be kind of like the area of Cambridge where I live now. It's between Coleridge Road and Pern Road. Mm. And houses have long since built up since then. But prior to that, the area of land used to belong to the Rock Dairy. And so there used to be cattle herds there. And then when war broke out, they built a temporary barracks. And for those of you who live in South Cambridge, you can still see, although they may have taken them down now, but certainly on their World War One exhibition pages on the internet, you can actually see a couple of photographs of what these temporary barracks look like. It's a very complex structure and setup that they've got, ranging from just ordinary wigwam-style tents to large marquees to much more permanent structures. Obviously, you've got the wooden huts there, but you've also got the large communal huts, one of which was actually paid for by the YMCA.
Like the YMCA down at near Parker's Peace?
Yeah, it's the same institution that actually funded the expense of buying the materials and paying for the expense of putting it up. That's what I mean by voluntary organisations actually bearing some of the costs for providing providing these social facilities and also suitable reading materials for the gentlemen as well. Now, the reason why I'm going on about church and morals is because a couple of years later, we find that the archive tells us that it was turned into the Cherry Hinton Military Hospital specifically for soldiers that had caught sexually transmitted diseases.
Oh, that's quite specific then, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there was another one doing exactly the same thing in Barnwell. And so we had, alongside the much more famous First Great Eastern Hospital, which treated tens of thousands of men wounded in the trenches, you had up to 1,000 soldiers who were recuperating having caught venereal diseases because they had been sleeping with prostitutes while they were out on leave front behind the lines. And initially, the authorities tried to use, if I can call, traditional methods of abstinence and just, you know, moral messages of don't break your marriage vows or don't breach these biblical commandments. But after a while, it became clear that that was definitely not the best way of doing it because it wasn't having results. In fact, it was having the opposite effect. And at one stage, it was estimated that the equivalent of 2 divisions worth of soldiers were not available for the front because they were being treated for STIs.
Oh dear.
This would have been really from 1916 to 1918 that the huts were used, or the barracks were used for, used as the Cherry Hinton Military Hospital. And in a way, when we look at just how quickly our own contemporary culture has changed really since the 1980s to the present day, you can almost understand why perhaps previous generations of historians have decided not to research this field compared to, you know, the glorious battles that were happening, because this is something that perhaps the civil and the moral authorities saw as something that was to be ashamed of, not just in terms of sexual morality, but also because here was evidence of thousands and thousands of soldiers just disobeying orders regarding their own health. And actually, one of the things that one of the articles that I found reading about them said was that the soldiers who ended up in those camps did not get paid for the time that they were in there, because being sent to those camps was basically seen as almost like a self-inflicted wound. Mm. So why should the government pay for it? But then this had further knock-on consequences, because it then created an incentive for soldiers not to report that they had fallen ill.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
And that meant, so for those that then ultimately went on home leave, it sometimes resulted in the spread of sexually transmitted diseases within local populations back at home.
Oh,
and so actually what we find really is that this camp is just one of the examples of really a response to a public health issue rather than just a crisis in sexual morality from the perspective of the established military and ecclesiastical orders.
Yeah. How long did these camps stay in Cambridge?
This one was actually taken down relatively quickly. And by 1919, you find there are adverts in the local newspapers basically saying, anyone want to buy a hut? You know, or a large marquee.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. There was a huge amount of now no longer needed war material that was just simply auctioned off. Some people would find other uses for the wood. You know, I think in particular those agricultural areas where you had a lot of seasonal work. But yeah, it was just auctioned off.
Mm. Yeah, so then it went back to being sort of green space again, and then it ultimately got built on.
It did. And actually, if you look at some of the photographs from the mid-1940s, actually some temporary war buildings were built on that site. And then very quickly after the war, lots of prefabs were built all over there before the more permanent housing that we see today was built upon there. Now, one of the other things that we also find is that the newspaper article itself doesn't just restrict itself to those barracks, but it lists a whole host of different buildings and institutions where they reported from. And these included the Belgian Rest Home, because Cambridge was a centre for Belgian refugees. Chesterton's roller skating rink, because in those days we had two or three roller skating rinks. The Corn Exchange, the Lee School, and the Field Ambulance Corps, which was based at the Gunvalin Quays cricket ground at the time. And then you also have updates for those who were basically living either in hospitals or workhouses at the time. So we have the annual reports from Addenbrooke's Hospital and the Cambridge and Chesterton workhouses, as well as some of the children's homes, such as the Dr. Bonanno's home for girls on Histon Road and the Harvey Goodwin's home by St. Luke's. And so the impression that you get was that the great and the good had to almost be seen to be doing their bit for charity on Christmas Day, because all of those institutions would list by name who had come along and visited them, such as, you know, the mayor and the senior councillors and the boards of guardians, who were the people who would inspect the workhouses to ensure that conditions weren't desperately bad, but, you know, were enough to put people off wanting to have an easy life.
Yeah.
So you could say, if you wanted to be really cynical, that it was kind of an early 20th century form of virtue signalling.
I was going to say, it's very early social media, really, wasn't it? And PR for them.
Absolutely. But again, remember the model, the economic and social model at the time, because it was a time of huge economic inequalities. And I think the Edwardian times is recognised as being one of the most equal. I think the wealthy realised that, A, there was this inequality at the time, and B, one of the things that you were expected to do in return if you had such wealth was you were seen to be doing your bit for charity.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. And what a different Christmas, eh? I hadn't even thought about a Christmas without music and television and, like you say, double bonus radio times. So thank you very much for that insight into a very different Christmas back in 1914 onwards. And I'd like to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very happy and healthy New Year, Anthony. We look forward to speaking to you in January.
You too. Thank you.
Cambridge 105 Radio.